Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
Let's go.
Happy Friday to you, North America. The mothership has connected. Welcome aboard. It's the 3-hour supersonic Soul Train line. GA with you from the CBS Sports Radio studios in New York City, broadcasting to affiliates nationwide and north of the border. Anchorage to Atlanta, Shreveport to Charlotte, Kalamazoo and Waterloo. Hey, you're on the air.
They listening, D.A. Everything we saying, D.A. Everything.
And we come to you live for the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. How we doing, everybody? Thanks so much for joining us. Boy, we have got a stacked show for you this morning on a Football Friday. We've got to cram a lot in. We've got football, as we will have Dave Revson, Big Ten Network, join us. We are coming into a clutch couple of weeks in the Big Ten for Michigan, Michigan State, Penn State, Ohio State, Wisconsin. We'll talk to Dave about that coming up later on in the show. He'll join us in the third hour of the program. We've got to talk about last night's thriller in Oakland. Thursday Night Football lived up to the billing for the second week in a row. That's a good thing. I've got your tasty top five college football games of the weekend coming up in about 35 minutes from now. We've got Falcons and Patriots coming up on Sunday night to discuss. Baseball-wise, the Dodgers are in. Who will follow to the World Series? Tonight is Game 6 between the Yankees and the Astros, and we will reset Piggy Doodle Dandy here. There's a come on, Cam, moment. And there's Marshawn Lynch being Marshawn Lynch. There's a lot to get to this morning on the show. And there's basketball as Lonzo Ball debuts with a stinker last night. So all of that is on the table. Hit us up on any of it or other things at 855-212-4CBS. Or on Twitter, DA on CBS is the handle. Watch us as well at watchda.com. The digital simulcast in sparkling high definition is always available there. We begin in Oaktown, East Bay last night, where the Chiefs came in following the loss of the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Raiders came in on a 4-game losing streak. One thing that has plagued the Raiders this season has been its offense. Running the football, finding Amari Cooper, getting Derek Carr into rhythm, all of those things have eluded the Raiders all season, and especially in the last 4 games. And last night, down 6, 85 yards ahead of them, about 3 minutes to go, the Raiders had their season on the line. You either go down the field and score a touchdown and salvage your season, or you lose and likely the season is over because that's 5 losses already, and anything more than 6 is going to leave you out of the playoff picture. And here was Derek Carr going to work, and here was the silver and black in white going down the field and saving 2017. It's where we begin. It's your cold open.
Derek going to roll left. Derek throws for the end zone, and it is caught for a touchdown by Michael Crabtree. The Raiders, and I think this time it counts.
There are no flags.
Knees and down in play in the end zone. Give it to me loud now. Touchdown, Raiders.
2-5 did not sound good. That made our stomach hurt. So, we wanted to, come out here and get a big win. This is a big win for our team, especially with the adversity we've gone through. Obviously, we've seen today, everybody saw that we can, throw the ball down the field.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
That was Raiders radio, as you might imagine, on the call. That was Derek Carr, as you might imagine, after the win. Big boy drive. Big boy throws. Big boy execution. And that was a rare time with all of the penalties at the end of the game that I actually agreed with all of the calls. It was chaotic. It was fits and starts. You thought the game was over a couple of times. However, I thought actually the officiating got all of those calls correctly. Jared Cook was down at the 1-foot line. It was a push off on Michael Crabtree. Ultimately, it was a touchdown to the final play of the game. I thought through all of that drama, they actually kept getting it right. And that says something. I would also say that Derek Carr proved he can be an elite quarterback in this game, in this league. He throws for 417, 3 touchdowns, no picks, and on that final drive was at his best. Huge gut check series, gut check moment, gut check win by the Raiders. It pulls them to 3-4, and they've got life. But guys, there is going to be an underrated, underspoken storyline today amongst the rubble of what happened last night. Everybody's going to talk about Marshawn Lynch running onto the field, getting kicked out. Everyone's going to talk about Derek Carr and that drive. Everybody's going to talk about the penalties at the end of the game. What they won't talk about enough is the Chiefs' defense. And Kansas City's defense the last 2 weeks has let that team down. The Chiefs were the best team in football. But maybe losing Eric Berry ends up being a much more difficult pill to swallow than we've given them credit for because they began 5-0. The Chiefs' offense, that wasn't the problem last night. They put up 30 points. Alex Smith went 342 through the air, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, only was sacked once. Kareem Hunt had another big game. Tyreek Hill had that huge touchdown. Albert Wilson catches the deflection and goes in for the score. Travis Kelce has a touchdown. They couldn't stop Oakland when it mattered. They could not stop the Raiders last night. The Raiders piled up 500 yards of offense. The Raiders went down the field 85 yards when it mattered most. The Raiders gobbled up yardage on that final drive, and they missed a couple of field goals. That Chiefs defense might be their undoing. They must be better. They've got the talent to be better. They've got to be better. The Raiders averaged nearly 7 yards per play last night. 505 total yards. And on the final drive, the Chiefs couldn't get the final stop. And it almost ended even earlier when Cook was right in the end zone of the pylon. Watch out, Casey. You've got a great offense, but your defense needs to step up as well. Here's your phone number, 855-212-4CBS. On Twitter, DA on CBS. And just like that, Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, and the New England Patriots win on Sunday, and they're tied for the best record in the AFC. Now, they obviously lose the head-to-head tiebreaker with the Kansas City Chiefs, having lost an opening night to KC. But boy, we were all dancing around the grave of the Patriots early. We all had our torches out like Lord of the Flies. It was going to be great to see a different team be the power broker in the AFC. And don't get me wrong, the Patriots still have problems, namely the defense. But if they beat the Falcons on Sunday, the Chiefs' red-hot start and the Patriots' clunky start basically don't matter. Again, head-to-head tiebreaker still goes to Kansas City, but all it will take after 7 weeks is a win over the Falcons at home, and the Patriots will be tied atop the AFC for the best record. And that's disheartening, because the Patriots will likely get better as the season goes on, and the Steelers and the Chiefs had their chance to open up a lead on the Patriots, and they both kicked the can on it. Now, who knows? Maybe the Falcons end up winning this game on Sunday night, redemption for the Super Bowl. But it just goes to show you that just when you think you have stuck that stake in the Patriots and killed them off, you have not. You have not, because the Steelers and the Chiefs, if they are the two biggest threats to the Patriots of the AFC, both have shown their flaws as well. Not a good night for the Chiefs' defense. Yoinks. For Marshawn Lynch, one could understand wanting to protect a cousin, a friend, a neighbor, a brother like Marcus Peters. One can't understand being so reckless as to push an official to do so. Also, Marshawn Lynch is old enough, enough experience in this league. You know you can't do that. This is not a hot-headed rookie anymore. This is a guy that basically was retired for a season. You know, Marshawn plays by Marshawn's rules, and that's kind of perfect for the Raiders, but it can also kill you. And last night, it definitely hurt them. You also have the Raiders breaking out in a fight within teammates on the sidelines. So not exactly a smooth night for Oakland, but I guess it never is. That is the old Al Davis Raiders spirit that is coursing through those veins. And you had to love Mark Davis scoring the final touchdown, watching that from the owner's booth, sitting down, and when they score it, just throwing two hands up. Like, ooh, Frosted Flakes today. You just never know what's going on inside that mind. It always looks like he ate a little bit too much pace at the age of 7. Yay! SpaghettiOs night! When we return, on the West Coast, they are celebrating in L.A. as well, because they're going to their first World Series in 29 years. Clayton Kershaw finally has his moment. We'll discuss coming up next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
We are the glitch in the simulation.
Everybody was in an uproar. Maybe this guy's thinking, hey, I'm 25 years old. Sorry.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
It's a Target Demo Friday, boys and girls. Let us know what you're doing as you listen to the show. It's also time to ask the pros, where you, the listener, gets to ask a question, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simply check out the link, cbssportsradio.com/askthepros, or tweet your question at CBS Sports Radio using the hashtag AskThePros. Trust the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Help you choose the brakes that are an exact fit for your vehicle, brands that you trust like Brake Best and Wagner ThermoQuiet. O'Reilly Auto Parts is the brake parts you need at guaranteed low prices. O'Reilly, better parts, better prices every day. What's going on, everybody? Good sports night last night as a thriller between the Chiefs and the Raiders. You know, Color Rush stinks. It just stinks. Because you have two of the coolest jerseys in football that are the perfect culture clash, the Chiefs red and white against the Raiders silver and black. And Color Rush takes that away. I actually liked the Raiders tops. Those are cool, badass. White with the silver numerals outlined in black look really cool. But the white pants make them look like pajamas. And the Chiefs' red jerseys are really cool. But the Chiefs' red jerseys and red pants with a red helmet makes them look like blood clots. You took what is an awesome old school AFL matchup whose jerseys haven't changed in 55 years and you made it look stupid, football. What you should do is you should make it Throwback Thursday. And instead of dopey, millennial-fueled marketing campaign Color Rush, you should make it Throwback Uniforms. And then we could get involved. Then I could get down with that. But pajamas versus blood clots or highlighters versus lawn accidents or orange explosion versus a fire extinguisher doesn't do it for me, NFL. I don't know. That's just me, though. Last night after the game, Marshawn Lynch, after he was tossed, was spotted with Marcus Peters, who he was trying to defend while getting tossed, on the BART, which is the mass transit train system, rail system of the Bay Area. Both of them together after the game, filming a music video for Beast Mode Productions. I don't even know what to do with that. I don't even know what that means. I don't even know if that's English. But that's pretty classic Marshawn Lynch. I saw that tweet. I'm like, wait a second. Marshawn Lynch, Marcus Peters were on BART filming for Beast Mode Productions. I suppose I can try to research this and figure out what exactly that means. Oh, Marshawn Lynch makes music videos now? Oh, okay. That makes total sense. Last night at Wrigley Field, ding dong, the witch is dead. The defending World Series champions go with a flicker into the night. Losers in Game 5, and the Dodgers are going to their first World Series since 1988.
Montgomery delivers. There's a fly ball to center field. It's on its way, and it is gone! A home run! Kike Hernandez, a two-run shot. It is 11-1. He is never going to have a night like this again. And few in baseball ever will. Kike Hernandez.
Kike Hernandez. That's Charlie Steiner on Dodgers radio. How about that? Enrique Hernandez, Kike, an unknown on the Dodgers, ends up hitting three home runs last night in a whitewash of the Cubby Bears. Note that 40 years ago, Reggie Jackson did the same thing in a World Series game and got a candy bar named after him. So I would say now, at the very least, we should have an emoji for Enrique Hernandez. I think there should be a Kiki emoji that we can all tweet out. Last night, we were hoping, unless you were a Cubs fan, that Clayton Kershaw would be redeemed. Because Kershaw's been a consummate professional. Clayton Kershaw's been the most consistent great pitcher of his generation. Kershaw is a future baseball Hall of Famer. But Kershaw has never been able to shake the demons of October. He has been average or below average in his postseasons. This was the fifth straight year the Dodgers have won the NL West. Five straight years. But the Dodgers have been unable to close the door and get through to the World Series, and Clayton Kershaw hasn't had his moment. He had it last night, man. It wasn't a Justin Verlander complete game, but he certainly had the moment. Six innings, three-hit baseball, only one run given up, hands it over to the Dodgers bullpen, and then they do the rest. It's a great moment for Kershaw. It's a redemptive moment for Kershaw. And the Dodgers have overcome all the question marks we all had about them when they went 1-16 nearing the end of the season. Think about how crazy the Dodgers' year has been. They begin the season looking like the greatest baseball team of the modern era. A team that was on pace for 115 or 116 wins. Couldn't lose. And then they crater. They fall off. They look like one of the worst teams in baseball. And we all say, oh, they peaked too soon. This is going to end early in October. Look at this. They were frauds. Now they get to October and they're through the first two rounds, having only lost once. Only once. In a nail biter of a game in game four. They closed on road turf. They nearly swept the defending World Series champs. And every time they needed a big hit, they got it. Every time they needed a big pitching performance, they got it. Every time they needed a couple of big outs from the bullpen, they got it. They're back to being great. And the exact opposite happened to the Indians. The Cleveland Indians caught fire at the same exact time the Dodgers were in the basement. And the Indians did peak too soon, because they get to the playoffs and get run out of the first round in five games by the Yankees and didn't look anything like they did when they won 22 games in a row. It's hard to believe that a flagship franchise like the Dodgers hasn't been to the World Series since the 80s. It's hard to believe. But it's true, they have not been there since 1988. That's the last time they were even in the World Series. And of course, that was the Kirk Gibson year. Good to have you back, Dodgers. Just because Octobers feel big when you've got big games in Chavez Ravine and they're finally World Series games. And now you have all these star-studded players on the biggest stage. Impressive run by LA, especially in this last series against the Chicago Cubs. And I talked about this during the offseason. I thought the Cubs would come back down to earth this year. I thought it was a little bit too much too soon for Chicago. It was a young team that became household names and broke the curse and will forever be etched in history in Chicago and baseball lore. But they were the preseason favorites last year. At the All-Star break, they had the best record in baseball. Going into October, they had the best record, and they ended up winning the World Series. There wasn't a growth of going through some devastation, tough losses, hard times, expectations not rising up to them. And they said, I don't think they're going to handle that very well next year, because they didn't grow through this. They just won it. And this year, they were never really quite right. They were never a machine. They never really looked like defending champs. Give them credit. At the end of the season, they did what it took to win the division. They win their first round series against the Nationals in nail-biting fashion. But the Cubs never felt like last year's Cubs. And I think they'll be better for it this time around, getting humbled a little bit. There was a little bit too much ego surrounding the Cubs coming into this year, which was weird because the Cubs were always lovable losers and never had the ego. But whether it was bellyaching about scheduling, not enough night games, pointing fingers at Eric Thames for too many home runs being hit, he must have been on steroids, getting into it with other teams, it always just felt like, you know, you guys need a little bit of humble pie here to get a little grounded after last year's championship. And I think this series helped do it because the Dodgers were far superior in this series. When we come back, tasty top five my favorite college football game for the weekend, plus Lonzo Ball's stinky debut. DA with you on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Now get zapped while the sun is out.
What's up, DA, buddy? Man, I love the show. I appreciate you. I'm trying to keep it one hand.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio on a Target Demo Friday. We always love hearing what you got going on as you listen to the show on a Friday. So hit me up on Twitter or on Facebook and let me know how you're listening, whether it's on the app, which radio station you're locked into. And then also let me know where you're at and what you're doing as you listen. And if you got some plans this weekend, we'll roll through those the final hour of the show as it's a Target Demo Friday around here.
All right.
That's facebook.com/TheDA Show. Go there, like the show page.
Yeah, get my timeline popping.
Or hit us up on Facebook, or I should say facebook.com/TheDA Show, or hit us up on Twitter, DA on CBS. Last night, Lonzo Ball had his debut as a rookie going up against the Clippers, and the tenacious bulldog of a guard, Patrick Beverley. Beverley took not so kindly to Lonzo Ball, shut him down the entire night. Ball was terrible, finished with just one bucket, and Beverley cursed him out after the game in the tunnel.
I mean, we got blown out, so I didn't play too well. You know, I like the shots we were getting, but obviously, you know, a lot of us were missing tonight, and that kind of affected our defense. So just going forward, you know, we just got to separate offense from defense. You know, if our offense is not going, our defense has to carry us.
So last night, you also had LaVar Ball, of course, being propped up after the game by ESPN. The way that ESPN has utilized Lonzo Ball and LaVar Ball, I find to be ridiculous. And I would say the same thing about Fox Sports. In this totally stupid, totally knuckle-dragging cycle of have LaVar on to say something outlandish, and then when he says something outlandish, trash him for it. Which is why I have refused at all corners to have him on this show, because I will not engage in this kabuki theater of, oh my God, I can't believe Lonzo said something offensive. Let's have Lonzo Ball on to say something offensive. So last night after this game, Stephen A. and Neil Everett interview LaVar Ball as though we need a post-game analysis and a stand-up for SportsCenter after every Lonzo Ball game with his dad. And what does his dad say? What does LaVar Ball say, do you think, on a terrible night where Lonzo shot 1 of 6, 3 points, hounded by Beverley, and overall just looked like a weeping puppy? And it was, nobody knew Patrick Beverley's name until he played my son. You'll never have your own sneaker brand. Who are you anyway? Of course you came after because it's my son. I got 2 more kids for you to come after. Blah, blah, blah. The same old bravado that we all think, at least I do, is completely fatiguing, exhausting, and stupid at this point. But this is just going to be the bit now, where no matter how bad Lonzo Ball plays, LaVar is going to have the obvious comeback of, so what? He's only bad because other guys want to beat him worse because he's so famous, because I made him so famous. And that's the ultimate, that's the last thing you can say. Did Patrick Beverley shut down Lonzo Ball because LaVar was his dad? Well, he shut him down because he's a really good basketball player. But his dad has put Lonzo in a position where players around the league want to eat him up. Lonzo's not a bad kid. But Lonzo Ball is now an easy mark and target around the NBA because his dad is such a loudmouth. So, in other words, LeVar Ball is writing a bunch of checks and now is saying, okay, Lonzo, you got to cash them all. LeVar doesn't have to go out there and do anything. And LeVar can always say, if Lonzo flames out, well, I got two more kids. And guys are going to come after him, play him harder because he's more famous. And I made him more famous. And he's got his own shoe line and all that junk. So he's never going to admit when Lonzo doesn't look good. And last night, Lonzo did not look good. I say this not because of LeVar. I say this because of Lonzo. Lonzo Ball is going to get everybody's best game, best effort, most intensity, most tenacity pretty much every single night. And that's because of his dad. And I don't know if Lonzo's ready for that. Last night, he didn't look it. Last night, he looked timid. He looked rattled. He didn't look the part. He did not look confident or smooth. Now, he'll grow through some of this. I mean, he's a really talented basketball player. And again, he's not a bad kid. But Patrick Beverley came out and started guarding him from the moment he got the ball on the other side of midcourt. Beverley was in his kitchen. Now, Patrick Beverley is wired a different way. Beverley is one of these junkyard dogs. Beverley is one of these hard-ass guys. Beverley is one of the toughest, nastiest defenders in basketball. So, luckily for Lonzo, he's not going to get Patrick Beverley every single night. But there's going to be other guys that want to pull a Patrick Beverley and make their name because it's Lonzo. And there's a part of me that thinks Lonzo's kind of soft to have to deal with that. There's part of me that wonders if Lonzo can get eaten up because he just can't match these other guys' anger and fire. He's not built like that. He's not wired like that. He's a nice guy. He came from a middle-class background. He's been in the limelight forever. You know, he's just not a bad dude. And Patrick Beverley wants to eat you. He wants to come up and he wants to eat you up. Pardon for my Chuck Pagano. It's not like they can eat you. It's not like they can actually eat you. So I don't know how this thing is going to unfold for the Lakers and Lonzo Ball. I mean, it gets better because, again, not everybody is Patrick Beverley. But there's going to be a lot of guys that want to take a shot at Lonzo. And I got to see if he is ready for this. I mean, yeah, it's nice to do this in rookie league. But again, it's rookies. It's rookies and it's fringe NBA roster guys. It's only one game. Maybe by midseason it's different. Maybe he totally gets into the flow of things. But you can be certain. There's a lot of guys that have circled the Lakers on their schedule saying, oh yeah, now I got him. Now I want to shove a big ball of brand shoe right up you know where on LeVar. And look, it's only game one and I'm tired of LeVar. I'm just glad ESPN is going to make him a post-game analyst. Great! That's going to be awesome. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. 855-212-4227. Hit us on Twitter as well, DA on CBS. Before I get to my tasty top five, a quick note, quick nugget from Mraz. Mraz, what's your confidence level at right now for tonight's game number six?
I vowed that the Astros had won their last game of the year, so my confidence level is a 10.
Yeah, but are you just saying that because you need to back up what you said?
Okay.
Kind of, yes.
If I'm being fair, Justin Verlander makes me a little nervous tonight in an elimination game for the Astros.
You don't think he spent all his bullets then in the last game?
I don't. I don't think the Yankees get off to a big start. I think Verlander gives them something. But I think inevitably the Yankees will get the late hit that the Astros won't tonight and win the game.
You do.
I do. The Astros' bats are tight. And we're also forgetting, everybody's talking about Verlander. Yankees have their ace on the hill tonight. Severino, bring it home.
Is Luis Severino now officially the Yankees' ace?
He's one of the six best pitchers in the American League this year.
Is he officially their ace?
Yes, he's their ace. He's the guy you hand the ball to. He got the start in the wild card game, got rocked, but then bounced back when they needed him to in the Cleveland series and came through. He had a solid effort through four innings, took the line drive last Saturday. Give me Sevy tonight.
So you believe this is it, and it's going to be Dodgers-Yankees after tonight?
I believe. I 120% believe. And even if it isn't, the Astros with Chad Morton in Game 7. or whatever his name is.
I think it's going to be Lance McCullers.
They're going to bring McCullers back at short rest? Even better, because McCullers, what, now has one good outing, and now we're going to trust him on 3 days rest?
You guys couldn't hit him.
Versus CC Sabathia? Let's go.
You guys couldn't hit him.
We could hit, and we came through versus the bullpen.
Do I smell bacon?
I can't
wait. Hey,
Daddy,
wait. I want an Oompa Loompa.
I want an Oompa Loompa. I want another World Series championship.
I want an Oompa Loompa now.
Can't wait to be down 2 games to the Dodgers and rally in that series, too.
855-212-4CBS. On Twitter, DA on CBS. Time for my favorite college football game of the weekend.
Every week, DA gives you his most appetizing college football games.
This is a tasty burger.
It's the Tasty Top 5.
I'm tasty.
All right, your number 5 game of the weekend that I actually think is a tie because it has the same exact storyline is one of the better teams of the Big Ten in the Big 12 on the road in conference. One is number 9, one is number 10. Oklahoma, number 9, goes to Manhattan, Kansas. And while they're 2 touchdown favorites, as I've mentioned before, going to Man Happiness can oftentimes rock a season of dreams. On the other side, number 10, Oklahoma State, goes to Texas as a 7-point favorite. OU and OSU are trying to chase down TCU in the Big 12. But they both have solid road challenges this weekend. I need to see, because I'm constantly at the element of the at the breakpoint of, am I supposed to believe in the Big 12? Well, then give me something to believe in. And if Oklahoma State goes to Texas and wins easily, or if Oklahoma goes to Manhattan, Kansas, and does what it's supposed to do against K-State and the Fighting Bill Snyders, then it's a little bit more of a, okay, I'll buy. But not until then, and I feel like one of these two is going down tomorrow for the Sooner State. My number 4 most interesting match of the weekend is a game that actually has a 17-point spread in it, and that is Syracuse at Miami. SU comes off of that thrilling upset of number 2 Clemson last weekend to immediately have to face a top 10 team of the country again. A brutal challenge for a Syracuse team that was not supposed to be very good this year. I want to see if Miami takes care of business, which I think that they will. SU has to travel all the way down south for this one. It's a long flight. But Miami doesn't have this overwhelming home field advantage like they used to at the old Orange Bowl. I used to love going to the Orange Bowl. I went to go see FSU at Miami in the old Orange Bowl, one of the wide right games. And man, it was one of my favorite college football experiences ever. I've gone to a couple games there and I loved that old barn rocking and creaking and falling apart. That felt like Miami football. Since they moved to the home of the Dolphins, it has not. But they're a much better team than SU. And I think Miami's got that magic this season. They've got to keep it going again. Or if Syracuse actually shocks the world twice with 2 upsets of top 10 teams, well, then there's something really going on with Dino Babers. Number 3 matchup of the weekend is my only SEC game of the weekend that's worth noting. That's because Tennessee is such a dumpster fire that you know Alabama's going to trash them. They're 5 touchdown favorites. Number 3 game is number 21 Auburn at Arkansas. What is Auburn? Is Auburn a top 10 team, or was Auburn frauds all along after they lost to LSU last weekend after blowing a lead? Had Auburn simply held on to a 20-point lead over a Tigers team that can't score points, Auburn would be in the top 10 and probably be number 8 or number 9. Instead, they drop all the way to number 21 or on the road against Arkansas. But Auburn is the big, heavy favorite. This is the pendulum that swings back and forth. And Auburn has its season ahead of it because it hosts Georgia and Alabama in the Iron Bowl. But it cannot stub its toe again. Auburn must win all of these games. And it starts tomorrow night in Arkansas, in Fayetteville, at a Razorback Stadium. Another place I've gone to go to see some cool college football. Number 2 matchup of the weekend. Big 10. I should say you Pac-12. Against Notre Dame as USC and the Fighting Irish renew their rivalries. If USC goes on the road to knock off Notre Dame, USC is once again going to put its foot atop the Pac-12 and say, okay, We are the power team here. Now, remember, you've got to deal with Washington after a loss, Washington State after a loss. Who knows if the Pac-12 shakes out. But Notre Dame can be the fly in the ointment, with only one loss being a one-point loss to Georgia at home, which right now looks like a good loss. But I think USC wins this game. And finally, the number one game of the weekend is in the Big Ten, and that's number 19 Michigan at Penn State. This is a brutal stretch for the Nittany Lions, but it begins right now hosting Michigan. James Franklin and the boys have to take care of their business. This is easily the best game of the weekend. This one is in Happy Valley at Beaver Stadium. Penn State begins its march, which it needs all these W's to get to a Big Ten championship game and beyond into a college football playoff. Michigan at Penn State tomorrow night is your best game of the college football weekend. And we know that Jim Harbaugh against rivals in his division has not fared very well. Can he pull the upset tomorrow night? When we come back, Atlanta has a chance to redeem itself in a small measure after the Super Bowl. Will the Falcons have the testicular fortitude to get it done at Gillette Stadium on Sunday night? We'll discuss next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.